Okay, sounds like that song is over, and another one about to begin, but before that happens, I'm going to cut in here and say, hello, boys and girls. This is Dixon Jane's podcast number, I believe, 492, because I think I just did an A and B version of 491, simply because it ran a little over, okay? So this is the start. It's January of 2015, January 10th, I believe. Saturday might have slipped into, yeah, it's 1:30. Slipped into the Sunday the 11th. My junior son's number two, Chuck, his birthday on the 12th. 23. Holy shit. Holy shit. Where does the time go? But I want to tell you, because I don't think it often comes up. On the Dixon Jane's podcast, because I find so many other things that just eat at me. The good stuff. And the good stuff is, man, oh man, oh man, I'm really enjoying communicating with both my sons now. I'm really enjoying hearing from them, talking to them, sharing with them. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Number one son, Jerry, is off for Taiwan on, towards the end of this month, January. And we'll miss him. We'll miss him a lot. But what are we going to talk about tonight on the Dixon James podcast? How I'm going to introduce this new show. And, of course, as you know, each show counts for a little more and a little more and a little more as I head towards that magic 500 number. Magic only in my mind, that's fine. Oh, big news, big news, big news. I recorded the first episode of Baby Jean Talks today. That would be episode number 000. We decided that was a safety factor built in case it didn't quite work, or really maybe it should have just been another talking to Tim, because I was talking to Tim Coyne, and goddamn, it was fun. I purposefully tried to avoid the old jokes. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about Shane and Tom in Windsor, and we'll do that shit. And, you know, I tried not to make it just the old, same old, hey, he's my good buddy, my good friend, Tim Coyne, Hollywood. Let's joke. And I was a little concerned about that. And I also felt I got to prepare. I got to have a line of questions. Like, I really, in my mind, God, I gotta make this one work. It's got to be right. And everything fell apart before the podcast. My chair fell apart. I was just late getting things going. Skype wasn't working. Everything was fucked up. And that was just the way it was meant to be. Thank God. It just, boom, it flowed. So I'm happy about that. I'm proud about that. I begged Tim, basically, to let me, to connect me to Dan, what's his name? Dan Kroll? No. Dan Crass. No, Dan Klass. Oh, my God, that wouldn't help me, would it? Dan Klass. To record with him sometime. And because the theme is creativity. I want to talk about, what is it that makes you creative? Or where did you want to get to? Where are you now? What is it that drove you when you were a kid towards this direction your life has taken, you know? So I have a very long list of people I want to interview and talk to. And while I'm doing that, of course, I'll share part of my own story as well. Anyway, it was good. And then tonight, I went to the Only Cafe with my good buddy, Brian. Held the table in the back, big one. got hit on by three women at the end. And, you know, hey, come on, whoa, come on, I'm old. I got to get back to Scarborough. I don't have time for this. But I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Yeah. Now, serious topics? Are there any? Today was a crazy day at home, just in the different directions we all went, and that was fine. That was good. The whole family situation, yeah, it's heading in the right direction. That's good. As far as creativity goes and myself, it's probably heading in the right direction, but it may just seem like a cop-out. Like, oh, God damn it, I'm not a writer after all. For 40 years, I thought I was. Gol darn it. It involves work, and I don't like work. That's basically where I'm at. Anyway, I think anything else I have to say, I can say for another day. We'll keep this short. This is just an introduction to the Dixon James podcast. I will be releasing, and I'll probably tell you, well, I'll tell you on this one, Google Baby Sally Talks. You know, the thing that was missing on the show with Tim was that he didn't know who Baby Sally is. He just says, yeah, the title sucks, get rid of it. But he doesn't know, and he didn't get the backstory. Because, you know, in preparation for our Skype talk today, he downloaded a couple of previous Dixon James episodes, listened, caught up to where I was, cause just in case, you know, it's a good thing to do. It's a smart move. Yeah, of course. You know, hey, it's like you got a job interview. You're going to prepare. All right, well, what's this company all about? So Tim did that, listened to the show. But he didn't have the whole story. He seemed to think I had dropped some acid with a Navajo native. And no, that's not the story at all. Baby Jane was the baby in the Dixon Jane's reader series that we grew up with. You know that. But Tim didn't know that. Dixon Jane's, the name of my podcast, the name of the zine before this, Dixon Jane's, a thing that I identify with because that's how we learn to read, to become productive members of Canadian society. Well, we're going to teach them all to read, and you teach them to read by reading the Dixon James reader. It says, come, look, Sally, you know, stuff like that. Simple, you know, one-word sentences. But it worked. We became literate, okay? It worked. It was a successful program. The characters are very simple. It was the middle-class white Western family, you know, North American family. Pop goes off to work. Dad. Mom stays home in a nice dress. It was Leave It to Beaver, you know, Beaver Cleaver, the 1950s black and white TV shows. It was very much Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best. Same thing. But you got two main characters, Dick and Jane, the boy, the girl. Dick's the eldest. Dick's got to know how to paint a boat and make it float, and Jane has got to probably know how to put on her party dress. You know, they're the characters. There's a third character. The least interesting, of course, Baby Sally. They got a little baby sister. Oh, family, of course, you know, 1950s, you got to have three people in the family. Well, you got Sally. Now, Sally can just chase balloons and run after Puff and Spot, the dog and the cat. Not necessarily in that order. And Sally doesn't talk. Well, I realize when I'm in Grand Canyon National Park, I realize in a flash, after ingesting some of those jelly beans, the Colorado cough drops and whatever, holy fuck, I'm Sally. I'm Baby Sally. I got an older brother and sister. They're Dick. They're Jane. Their life was planned out. It was mapped out. They're already under the control of, you know, the educators, the conformists. The people are going to say, this is your life and this is how you're going to lead it. They haven't yet reached Baby Jane. And Baby Jane comes of life and awareness in the 60s. holy shit, it's a different trip altogether. And that's why I realized that time in Grand Canyon, oh, I'm not Dick or Jane. I'm Baby Sally. I'm Baby Sally. Forgive me if I've got some of the names mixed up. You know, we got Dick, we got Jane, we got Sally. The parents never had names. I'm Baby Sally. And Baby Sally grew up to be different from Dick and Jane. Baby Sally was exposed to the war in Vietnam. Baby Sally was exposed to protests in the streets. Baby Sally was exposed to marijuana and LSD and all those other things. And Baby Sally's life got changed. Now, in the book, she never talked at all. And the thing I've been striving to do with the Dixon Chains podcast is give a voice from the 60s, even though I'm just talking about now and what's going on now and what's up my ass now. Really, I was trying to say, hey, man, those are my days. This is what happened. That's the thing I thought I'd write about. This is what it was like to be traveling through Europe, 69. I failed at that. I've given up on that. That's fine. We'll park that for now. But I realize I should express the voice of Baby Sally, because that's who I am. That's who my generation is. Was not Dick, not Sally. That's my brother and sister's generation. My generation is Baby Sally. Baby Sally never talked throughout the book. She just chased balloons and showed her white underpants. But on this podcast I recorded today, starting with Tim number 000, Baby Sally talks. She's grown up. She's got things to say. She wants to talk to people. She wants to have conversations. She wants to share what she's learned. She wants to share the past. That's what it's all about. So there you go. I think you get that now, if you didn't get it before. And what I'm going to do now is shut this baby off. Listen to Weekend Review, my good friend Kenneth Pereiro. And get back to you another day, another time, with some music. Scarborough Dude, soon to be Ken, signing out. And thank you very much. Like a
kick like a mule. I could be a beggar, but I'd rather be just as cruel.
Chicken in the oven. Check, 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 check. Oh, boy. What is it? It's the 13th today. January 13th, 2015. Celebrated my son's birthday on Sunday and on Monday. Sunday to a wonderful restaurant that if you live in Toronto, you really should check out. The Camino Bistro, or Bistro Camino. Japanese chef doing French-style food with a set course for, you know, $30-$35. Excellent. Sadly, we were the only customers in there that night, Sunday night. Made a reservation and the place was empty, but the waitress is phenomenal. She speaks fluent Japanese and English, and she'll just jump from person to person who's sitting at the table. So all my wife's order, of course, in Japanese, and then just without even batting an eyelash, she switches to English for my sons and I. A really, really classy place. Good food, and it's on the Danforth near Dawes, just one block west of Dawes. So it's the east end for you Torontonians. And I hope they don't go out of business. It's in an area where they're gonna, it's up and coming, right? But it's always been a little rough, and people are always sort of afraid of the East End. But highly recommended, Camino Bistro or Bistro Camino. And then Monday night, last night, my wife just boom popped a roast in the oven, and next thing you know, we got fabulous meal and bottle of sparkling wine to start it all off and give us all a nice little glow, and then into a couple of bottles of red. So we are a drinking household. I've just come back from the LCBO where I returned all the holiday empties. My God, there are a lot. Anyway, we won't dwell on that too much. What's to say? I'm in Thompson Park. I'm looking out at the snowscape. It's nice. We had had a tremendously cold spell, and just suddenly the sun is out, and it's warmed up. But let's not talk about the weather anymore. The events in France. I intentionally didn't talk about them. Didn't talk about them with Tim when I recorded the podcast Saturday. Didn't talk about it in my previous podcast, simply because I didn't want to, and it had just happened. This is the assassination, the brutal murder of the staff at Charlie Hebdo in Paris for their satirical comics and drawings and the grave offense they caused a certain group of Islamic fanatics. I guess I was sad, terribly, terribly sad at the loss of these lives, the cartoonist, the editor, the policeman lying in the street who happened to be a Muslim himself. Sad, and then, of course, angry. And I knew the anger would take over if I started talking about it. I was encouraged to see so many people out in the streets of Paris. They say over a million. Largest congregation of people out in the streets since the Germans were driven out at the end of World War II. And it was encouraging. And now, of course, these people said we were putting an end to that magazine, and it's coming back out, I think it's tomorrow, with a print run of 3 million copies, which will be sold out, I'm sure. I'd get a copy of myself if I thought I could. In commemoration of those who died, and with a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad on the front page. This is what caused the offense in the first place, and this is right back at it, said, you don't tell us with our history of freedom of expression and satire. No outside group with a claim to having the pure, true religion with certain rules that everybody on the fucking planet has to abide by. Fuck you, no thank you. They just put it right back out there, here. And it was fitting. It was the Prophet Muhammad saying, Je suis Charlie, which was a sign everybody has been holding up all over the world to say we're sort of united in our respect for freedom, the value we place on freedom of expression, and not being told what to do by people with a very narrow interpretation of the Quran. So I really don't want to give any more time on this podcast to that particular topic. You've already heard me in the past. I've said things that I could easily be killed for, I'm sure. Somebody would find it justifiable. Not my friends, but somebody might. And I guess anybody listening to this shares similar thoughts and outlooks, so there's no convincing, there's no argument to be made, there's no trying to argue one position or another. This was just wrong. This needs to be confronted head on. Hey, whoa, back up, assholes. You don't tell people what they can and cannot do. You can, you've got guns, you've got weapons, you can try. We'll come back. Unfortunately, of course, there will be a backlash, and people who are innocent or moderates will be branded as fanatics when they aren't. And people will already, I think it's already starting, there'll be a backlash in Europe, worried about the Islamization. I don't know, I probably have strong views about that myself. I live in Scarborough, I'm surrounded by mosques that weren't there before. But that's just the changing population of Canada. Not an issue that I need be worried about. As long as those children, the majority of them, are going to public schools and learning what every other Canadian learns, should learn. I think my greater worry is not so much mosques, but the private schools, the madras, the places where people are taught the true values, the true belief that it's us, adherence to the one true religion and all the other infidels. That's very dangerous. We don't want that. But here I am talking about this longer than I really wanted to. I was seeing earlier in the preceding clip how enjoyable it's been to have my number one son back home and watch the interaction between him and number two son, which is good. And Kenji helping out with cooking and everybody enjoying the kotatsu that he set up in the living room that I talked about earlier. With that beautiful cozy warmth, especially on a winter day where you can just sort of sit there with your legs underneath this little heater and watch TV. Coronation Street. It's nice. He'll be leaving on the 20th. He'll be missed. Question is whether he's going to bring The Rock with him or not all the way back to Australia, and I'm inclined to think that's a good idea. You know, I really don't have much to say today. This may be just a short clip. There's nothing that's pressing. I think I told you, and I've given up on the idea of writing. It's just simply hard work. And I guess after I made that decision, it's funny because another teacher sat down across from me and shouted, "Oh, wow, I've been asked to speak at a conference in London, Ontario." And it was, oh, what's that about? Oh, they want me to give a reading from my book. Oh. So we have a young published author, a collection of short stories. Somebody lived in Korea, traveled all over Southeast Asia, and had a book published by Oberon Press called Interpreter or Interpreters. And I thought, well, good for you. And I bet you really worked hard. And then I looked, yeah, he's got a master's in English, and yeah, he took a creative writing course, and I bet you this person devoted hours and hours. He's been published in many magazines. And I'm not going to do that. I don't have the talent to start with, but more than that, I don't have the incentive, the drive to create something worthwhile. And if it's just going to be a biography of just me telling my stories for, you know, future generations, who was a great Uncle Ken or whoever, I'm not going to go to all that trouble. And this is such a trail now already through the internet that is it really necessary? I was listening to the best episode ever, and Dave made reference to going into the LCBOs with his father in the old days when you stood at a counter and there was a list of every bottle of wine, port, scotch by name, a printed list, and you had to get a form and write down the quantity, the price, the number of that particular item. And you handed that to a clerk over a counter, and he went into a back room, or somebody did, and came out with your bottle. You didn't get to touch the liquor or see the liquor or browse the shelves. And Bob Goyette from Quebec, of course, at Belle Province, said, "I can't believe you guys in Ontario are that backwards." And yes, we were. But the funny part is, Dave's talking about this from his father doing this. Hey, I remember the last time I did that. It was at LCBO in the market section of Ottawa. And we just were going to a party. We wanted some booze. And to have to go in and go through this ridiculous thing. And it was probably one of the last ones left around. But we did that in our day. Now, how did that connect to the preceding statement about writing about the old days, capturing the old days, what it was like when I was younger? I still like to in some ways, because there are so many things that do come up that I realize, no, that's somebody's father has that memory, not that person I'm talking to. And there just are a lot of things. So there's a part of me would like to be able to capture that, and it's not necessarily by writing. It could even be by storytelling, by talking. But since I'm putting an end to the Dixon Jane's podcast, because I've never been able to do that on this podcast anyway, it's always been about what's happening now. And the other podcast, I've already talked about starting the Baby Sally Talks, until the name gets changed, is supposed to be on the topic of creativity and less about me and more about the people I'm interviewing. So I don't know how or where this would fit in. Talk of the old days. Yeah, I mean, even universities have changed. And certainly the Canada I grew up in, wow. When you look at the course books, I've already talked about the European bias and how horrible the Iroquois were in our textbooks and how that certainly changed. There's a feeling of it'll just be lost forever, and people won't know. And of course, that's what happens to every age and time. It gets lost. But sometimes people can do research or go back or see pictures or read a story or an old letter or something and find out more about that time. And I think there's a part of me wants to contribute to that body of not knowledge, but that those memories of those times. Final comment before I sign off. I've already talked about the brain being mushy. I look back over past schedules at the college, and I'm doing the two courses now. I'm a little pissed off because today, Tuesday, my day off. I only teach Monday and Friday, but I had to come in today to move two students, which shouldn't be my job at all as a part-time teacher, but because they were placed in the wrong class, one who was a native speaker, so I have to come in, go online, research, find out the student, print out a form, find out who's the teacher who's in charge, write a report what grade I think she should be placed into or what level, and file that on a day off for which I don't get paid anything. And I find that really, really just annoying, just plain unfair. And of course, as soon as I get in, another student writes, he found out somebody was being recommended for a change. He writes, "Hey, my English is high, I want to be changed too." And so you've got to take the time to write him back, dig out his file, read it again to make sure you're fair the first time. There are so many injustices that if I was a union member, or if we had a union, these things would be dealt with. All the other teachers feel exactly as I do, but nobody dares raise their voice. Nobody dare. No individual dare. See, this is the kind of thing I teach. Is it dare or dares? Subject-verb agreement. No one dare. No one dares. No one dares raise their voice. You correct me if I'm wrong on that. Because I could just as easily say, no one dare raise a protest. No one dares. No one individual dares raise a voice. The point I was trying to make, it's getting harder and harder for me to teach. And long ago, I was teaching many more classes. And I look back now and think, holy fuck, thank God. I've pared down to just two classes a week. But at the same time, there's this really scary feeling that's kind of growing in me that I'm getting old. And with the age, you know, people retire at 65, and I'm thinking, yeah, there might be a reason for that, because you're really not as sharp as you used to be. You can't do it that way, and I hope I'm just sort of in the normal range, you know, of people who are just with declining skills, and it's not accelerated on my part, but there's still, it's a pretty shitty feeling that, oh man, I can't answer that quickly anymore. I can't think. You know, you listen to the shows Anthony does with co-hosts and think, well, I wouldn't be able to bounce back with my answers quite like that. The thing is, I don't think I ever could anyway, even in my prime, but that's something else. All right. I filled another 5 minutes over absolutely nothing. I'm sorry. Scarborough Dude to the Dixon Janes podcast. Just wanting to share with you a little bit on this show about what it's like to be me. Oh, by the way, I go back to my therapist tomorrow. I'm detecting, and it could be just my imagination, but I am detecting very slight changes. A little more inclined to sort of do things as I think about them. Like instead of just when I opened the closet door to get a can of soup and saw all the empties, right away, I got them out of the closet. I got them out. I sorted them out. Put them in boxes, bags, carried them out, put them in the trunk of my car, and got rid of them today. Like, today. Rather than, oh, I better do that this weekend, you know, and then forget about it. And little things I'm tending to more quickly, and I am being just that much more patient than I was before. And maybe the fact, to go full circle here, that I've released this burden, a feeling I have to write a book, story. Maybe just letting that go is part of this process. Even though I'm in, you know, halfway through this book on how to be more creative, the creativity, as we talked about with Tim Coyne, can surface in different ways. All right, that will be the end of this conversation. Scarborough Dude, signing out, over and out. Bye for now. It's me, and I'm only going to talk for a few minutes because my hands will freeze if I go on too long. I'm sitting on my favorite bench, Catside parking lot of Bluffers Park, looking over the inlet. The sun is just low in the sky, but it's a bright sun today over this cold snow, and it's just beautiful to look at. This part of the inlet's frozen over, well, almost. It's a bit chopped up. Yeah, it wouldn't support your weight. In fact, I see blocks of ice floating here. It's just at that critical point. And beside me, there's about a dozen, 15 Canada geese just sitting in the snow, but still getting their beaks out under the snow to pull up little tufts of grass and things. It's amazing they survive here. Like they're all, it's feeding time, right? The sun's going down. Sitting in the snow and yet pulling up shoots of grass and being able to eat. Oh, it's lovely, lovely, lovely. I love Bluffers Park and I love it year-round. But man, it's winter. It's cold. It's fierce. At least there's no wind today. And I think that makes all the difference. God, I do talk a lot about the weather, don't I? And the scenery around me, and that's really not of much consequence to you who are out there listening. I feel I have to have topics. I spent the whole day, it's a Tuesday, my therapy appointment was canceled due to an illness, not mine. So I stayed home and I spent the entire day marking and watching old sort of beach blanket pictures, drive-in movie pictures on Turner Classic Movies from the 60s. And it was great. There was one that had the animals and Dave Clark 5 on lip-syncing terribly. But just great to see them at that very peak, the beginning of the British wave. So all the people up dancing to the music had their hair, with tons of hairspray. There was not one long-haired person other than the musicians who had those Beatle-cut styles, and they're still wearing suits. But no freaks had entered the scene yet. Nobody's smoking pot. They're just dancing the boogaloo and, whatever else. They were just great, like, fun. The second one was Frankie Avalon, and it was crazy. Crazy, innocent, silly fun that maybe never really existed, but you sort of look at it and you can understand the teens in those days watching these pictures would be envious. Oh my God, those girls are so beautiful and the guys so cool and everybody's dating everybody. It was a Disneyland kind of innocence, you know, just trying to steal a kiss. But great escape, fun to watch as you're sitting there with a pile of papers on your lap. Yeah, so that's how I amused myself today. Oh, and I don't think I've got anything else to add to that. I think that's all you get from me. This is just a little sunshine interlude. Feeling kind of good, I guess. Maybe that's what I'm celebrating. Just feeling good. Enjoying this newfound freedom of just 2 days a week. Although, I still have an awful lot more. If I really was looking for work, I'd find it. All right. A goodbye from the geese and Scarborough Dude. Signing out. Only I had the camera for that shot. A dozen of them just up. You heard the call, right? Telling each other, hey guys, time to get a move on. And they just flew up right in the direction of the sun. It would have been this beautiful silhouette of a dozen Canada geese against the low sun reflecting on the water. Damn it, damn it. And here I am talking to you instead of taking pictures. It's your fault I didn't get the picture, but you heard about it. All right, signing out. Glad I stayed for that extra minute. Bye for now.
Had me a gal in Tulsa, I thought she'd be my own. But she up and left me for a waddy from San Antone. She didn't even tell me that she was leaving me. Now I'm the lonesomest cowboy down in the cow country. Got the cowboy blues, I'm blue as I can be. That old lobo howling at the moon ain't got a thing on me. Got a doggone lonesome feeling that I just can't seem to lose. I'm just a lonesome cowboy singing the cowboy blues. Catch me a cattle train, leave my cares behind me and never come back again. And if you ever see her, just tell her this for me. She made me the lonesomest cowboy down in the cow country. Got the cowboy blues, I'm blue as I can be. That old lobo howling at the moon ain't got a thing on me. Got a doggone lonesome feeling that I just can't seem to lose. I'm just a lonesome cowboy singing the cowboy blues. Cowboy blues.
blues, I'm blue as I can be. That old lobo howling at the moon ain't got a thing on me. Got a doggone lonesome feeling that I just can't seem to lose. I'm just a lonesome cowboy singing the cowboy blues.
Kick. 4:15 on a Friday afternoon. And, of course, I am back at Buffers Park. I don't do any recording at home at all. The sun is shining down just like in the last recording. It's beautiful. It's shining on some iced over growth, trees, plants, whatever you have, little trees. And they're just, you know, an inch thick with ice. But it's quite beautiful when the sun's shining down on it. God, I gotta stop describing, because I'm not even describing very accurately. It's a beautiful place to be, but I was really thinking today, I gotta find another place to go. I gotta change. Mind you, with only a few podcasts left, maybe it really doesn't matter. And you're used to it being here, right? It's comfortable being in Bluffers Park. I had a little nap. I had to get up. I was up by 6 this morning, and taught my 8:30 class. I was dreading it. I gotta tell you, I was just dreading going in. Oh, shit, I don't want to be working. And, oh, Christ, you know, and thinking in my head, well, you know, what's the order? What are you going to do? I've never in my life followed a detailed lesson plan, you know, that they teach in Teachers College. Okay, first 15 minutes, you're going to do this. 10 minutes, you're going to do this and change up the exercises. I just go by my instincts. And it was a good class. It all worked out well. But it was just the idea of having to get up early and get there and knowing that students were going to come late. So I made a point of starting an activity at 8:30. Boom. Here's a dictation. And it was good because as the students came in late, well, they could only start at number 5 or 6 because they missed the others. And but then I got them to introduce each other, got everybody talking, tried to separate them by language groups, but I ended up with too many people with overlapping languages like Punjabi. Separated the Chinese and the Koreans and all the others. But it was good. They made a point of getting up and talking about each other as best they could. A good warm-up exercise. So when I'm in the classroom, it's fine. I actually enjoy the interaction and you know, taking control, because you have to be in control the whole time. And that's not something I'm necessarily good at or like doing, you know. I'm much more comfortable in sort of a secondary role, a passive role. So anyway, I came down here, I got my latest Maclean's magazine with me, and I thought, oh great, there's a whole article about the decline of, it wasn't the decline of Islam, but how the Muslim world is failing. Islamic nations are increasingly isolated, impoverished, and left behind in the march of progress. And it was actually fairly well written, the part I read. It was talking about during at the exact time of the assassinations in the name of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Just at that time that they were being slaughtered, the writers and editors and cartoonists of Charlie Hebdo, the International Space Station, with absolutely no Islamic involvement of any kind, of no Muslims, no Muslim nation contributing to, was flying over Paris just at that time. And, you know, we are literally worlds apart. These are people revenging the name of somebody who's been dead for 1,400 years. And I know the whole thing is a lot more complicated than that. There is politics, there's economics, there's everything else involved. But still, there are these rigid belief systems that really don't belong in the future of man. They just don't. Anyway, I didn't particularly feel like talking about that. Anthony Marco and his latest Love-Hate Things talked about education, and I wanted to jump in on that. And now I don't feel like it. And I guess this has kind of been a personal podcast. So, yeah, I could do a podcast and talk about all these external things. What's in the news? What's my opinion about this? There was one thing. Well, I'm just about to say, I'm not going to do that, but now I'm going to do it. Because there's one story that's driving me nuts. The Toronto District School Board, largest in North America, I believe. Ridiculous. This was a penalty from the Mike Harris Conservative government when he merged Toronto, the school boards, and everything else. It's a monster. It has been dysfunctional from the time they merged six different school boards catering to different populations in different parts of the Metro Toronto area and put them in one and said, go to it. And it's been nothing but infighting and politics and, oh, it's ridiculous. And it's not the fault of everybody there. There are people who just aren't playing nice, the same way Toronto City Council. They can't agree. They've got their entrenched positions. And it was better off and served Canadians, Ontarians, the children of this province much better when there were separate school boards. So they should at least be divided up into maybe four regional sectors and start all over. But that's not going to happen. But there's one woman charging the Toronto District School Board with a human rights issue. She has a son who has anxiety, high anxiety. Now, I've had a son who's dealt with anxiety, and it's a very real thing. But we worked through it. He worked through it. He got over it. This is the same son that's traveling the world. But her son, in this case, just can't get to school, can't get out of bed, just can't face going to school, and wasn't being accommodated. It was bad enough in elementary school when sometimes a teacher would have to actually walk him to school. Excuse me. He is school phobic. So her only solution was to send him to a private school with a boarding school, because Toronto doesn't have boarding schools. We don't have boarding schools in our public system like this. And now she wants the Ontario Human Rights Code. She's appealing and wants to be paid for all her son's tuition at the school, the cost of being in residence. Let's see, she's seeking $101,495, including $50,000 in general damages and almost $48,000 in tuition for part of 2013 and the entire 2013-2014 school year, because they didn't meet her child's needs. And this is driving me nuts. Like, she's alleging discrimination. You did not accommodate, you did not give my student the education he was promised, and it's not his fault. He has anxiety and can't get to school. You have to meet his needs. Since mother said her son had been diagnosed with generalized and social anxiety disorders, and I'm sorry for him because it is real, depression, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, and learning disabilities. Holy moly. She believes his refusal to go to school developed into agoraphobia. Oh, my God. Every day he had intense physical and mental reactions to getting up and going to school. He felt sick every morning. So, she wants us, the taxpayer, to pay for her son's private school. And it drives me nuts. It's just one more case of one person saying, hey, shout the loudest, make the most noise, and maybe they'll give in. Because it's not their money anyway. It's our money, the taxpayers' money. Sorry, your son doesn't quite fit. He's not going to fit very easily in the working world either, and I guess we'll have to support him there too, or sue some company for discrimination because they don't accommodate the fact that he didn't feel like coming in today, and so on. Everybody has problems. So, you see, those are the things I really don't want to talk about, because I'd really rather talk about my own problems. And the only reason I want to talk about my own problems is because that's what I've talked about on the Dixon Jeans podcast for so long. And I've felt this almost a responsibility to be honest and open and sharing what's going on. You know, I know for some of you think, well, that's just, you're just so wrapped up in yourself. That's why you're not getting anywhere. The fact is, I've been really... I wouldn't call it depression, but these terrible swings of just being so down on myself, and all day yesterday, just, man, what have I done with my... Why did I take all these courses? Why was I thinking, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this? Where did I lose touch with the real world? And this business I've mentioned before of comparing myself and feeling in every respect a failure. And you know there's other times I'm doing nothing but brag about. But I've had a great life. I've loved the things I've done. It's been exciting. It's been fun. I've taken on these challenges. And why is it now that I'm questioning everything I'm doing or not doing and feeling down about it? Are these just mood swings? Is it some kind of disorder? Is it just... What I'm afraid it is just getting old. And just like, okay, yeah, probably I'm not going to have any big adventures. The fact, all that talk about wanting to write this book and this big project that was going to follow the Dixon James podcast, that's why I was stopping. I had to take on the next project. And here I am, you know, a few days after, well, just probably a week ago, throwing it all out. No. I just discovered I don't really want to be a writer anyway. It's too hard. It's too much work. And I think that's true. And I don't think that's a bad thing. That, okay, I'm abandoning that. Good. I'm letting it go. But I thought there was going to be something in there. And then that thrill of, oh, this is going to be this comic. And then, no, well, that was just because you're high, man. Forget that one. And this office I've had and I've pictured... private classes, like a little group of just a few students. Of course, I'm picturing young Japanese females. Maybe that's part of the problem. But in the nicest of ways, in the most professional of ways, believe me, seriously, to teach about the Beats and the Beatles and this culture. And, well, why the hell would they want to know about that? But this is what I want to teach. And I'm going to get you thinking, and we're going to go in depth and explore these characters and what it means to be a bohemian or whatever. You know, it'd be so much fun, and assign readings and discuss these things. I had that little bubble. And then the bubble of, yeah, no, really what I'm doing. The reason I'm taking the counseling is I'm going to help these families who are just having trouble with their 16-year-old son who won't listen to them anymore and is hanging out with bad people and they suspect he's smoking weed. I mean, there's going to be problems here. There's going to be violence if somebody doesn't come in and talk to both sides. That's what I want to do. That's really what I want to do. But I'm not doing any of these things. It's like I'm withdrawing more and more and more to the point where I don't want to do anything. And maybe that's the old age. Maybe I'm just getting tired. Maybe I don't want to start anything fresh, but it's very confusing to me because I really felt just in the matter of, man, I don't know, this year, months, 6 months, starting to fade. And there's a little bit of hope saying, yeah, man, that of course that's what you do. You start unplugging at 65. You're supposed to unplug. Any of you getting older might be feeling that way. I know I don't have too many older listeners, but you might think, yeah, you just want to do the things you want to do. Come down to Bluffers Park to watch the sunset or watch some old Turner Classic movies. You don't want to be taking on new challenges. Who needs that, man? So it's left me in a real state of confusion and a real state of comparing. And one thought I had, the people who I'm doing this podcast for, you, the podcast listeners, and those of you out there who are podcasters, I'm doing an awful lot of comparing myself to you. And when I hear things that I'm impressed by, I think, I can't do that. I couldn't do that. And I start beating up on myself again. But I've put my old friends, I almost said real friends, but the friends I've known outside the internet, the friends, for example, the couple who visited us from Vancouver last summer, or last fall, we had such a wonderful time together, and it was so pleasant. And these are real people and real friendships that have lasted, you know, 40, years and more. And I don't feel that way around these people. So as part of my problem that it's like people talk about on Facebook when people put up all the happy pictures and suddenly they go, well, gee, I didn't go to Cuba this year. I'm not off in Spain. God damn, I'm not doing. Is that part of it that this interaction and this social media is actually turning back and biting me and interfering with my normal state of mind? My counselor for the Gestalt gave me a little video to watch. And it's about mindfulness versus mindlessness. And, of course, it was a TED Talk kind of thing from a psychology professor who's written on this subject. And how most of our time we live in a mindlessness state of just, we're not perceiving what's happening now. We're not in the moment. We're just sort of on, you know, robotic state of mind. Just follow, just this is what you do, and you're not thinking. Nothing is stimulating your imagination. And they did a lot of studies on this, and they found during that time when people are not thinking fresh thoughts about what's changed about this very second, this minute, this now, what's different. For example, this could just be another trip to Buffers Park. Oh, yeah, same old, same old. And not that the cloud structure looks different today. I didn't notice the ice on those branches, you know, the immediate feeling. When you're just in the routine of things you do all the time, you're more inclined to get depressed. You're more inclined to compare yourself to others. You're more inclined to do or be in a state of mind with a lot of negative things going on that you're not aware of. And when you do the switch, when you suddenly say, whoa, 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 remind yourself, get here now. Be now. As I feel when I'm doing the podcast, you actually feel better. You're actually not comparing yourself to others. You're not dwelling on your woes and so on. I mean, that's, I guess this is just very obvious to you. But the fact is that most of us spend far too much of our time in a mindless state as opposed to a mindfulness state of awareness. And I think that's something I've always said I'm working on this podcast, but I think I just have to do a better job. Oh, God. You know, even that was a struggle getting up. The one thing I will own up to, for sure, I just do not have the same verbal skills. My brain simply is not working as well as it should. And it's obvious as I trip over my words, I'm not able to keep up. I have a thought and the words just aren't coming out as quickly as I want, or the right words, and I'm not able to pull these things out. And that's very frightening. Part of it could be, yeah, no, it's just old age. Yeah, you know, we lose our edge. But that scary, scary, scary part is, oh, man, it's going to only get a lot worse and maybe faster than you'd like it to. And you're only 65, and if you start losing it now, holy shit, you're going to be in a home. You're going to be put away. And that's scary. That's very, very scary. And I don't think that's there yet. And when I get out and party and head off to the Only and do the things I like to do and get in a better frame of mind, or even, you know, standing in front of, 20 students waiting for the next set of instructions, I'm on my game. I can do it. I can pull it off. But definitely there's a decline. And maybe I'm just trying to come to terms with what does it mean to be 66? God, I'll be 67 in April. What does that really mean? Because I don't know. So I got a lot of work I still have to do on myself. That young man I talked about who wants $100,000, God, I would have taken a bunch of money for both my sons for some of the struggles they had growing up and adjusting and getting ready for life. But I just wasn't loud enough. I didn't complain enough. I didn't feel entitled. There's the thing. I didn't feel entitled. So we've all got to make our own way, one way or another. We just have to get on with it. Life isn't easy for anybody. I guess I'm done. I don't know if that was very satisfying or not. I never know till after I put this thing away and put it into a podcast and then sometimes listen back and say, yeah, that was okay. You said what you needed to say. You got across what you wanted to get across. And I guess if this was an English class and I'd just given them a piece of reading to do, I would have said, well, what was the author's point? So I'll do it for this podcast. What was my point in the past 20 minutes of rambling off to you? What was it I was really trying to communicate? That's a hard one because I don't think I was looking for self-pity. No, for looking for pity, sympathy, sorry. You see, there's the wrong word. I probably was indulging in a little bit of self-pity. Poor me, I'm getting old and I'm not as quick as I used to be. Part of it was I was wanting to share, because I know virtually all of my listeners are younger than me, what's ahead for you. But actually, I've always wanted to give you hope. I do have to top that off. I was saying yesterday I was really feeling shitty about myself and my limited capabilities and how little I know and so on and so on. It was just, bam, down on myself. And then I listened to the Marshall McLuhan Variety Hour, and Mark Blevis had put forward my name as one of the Kens when they do the 5 D's. If you know what I'm talking about, fine. If you don't, fine. And they had to make reference to Ken, and there were some very funny comments made. And I felt truly warmed. I felt bathed in warmth. That's not a good image to share. Especially with those guys. Oh, my God. It was a good feeling. I felt acknowledged. I felt known. I felt, gee, I've been a part of this community. I've been a part of this history. These people do know me. And the jokes were funny, you know. What if Ken was sitting there and, you know, the Scarborough dude came by and joined him at the bar. Would they get along? Probably not. And there were a lot of very funny things said, but I felt very connected and belonging. And isn't that funny? Because it's almost a contradiction to what I was saying earlier, saying this community, this social media is maybe making me feel worse. And yet there was an example of me feeling that I belonged and that I've done my bit. I've played my part. Maybe that's it. And maybe that's it. Maybe I just fucking want to walk off the stage and get on to something else and find something else and really get at what it is I want to do. And that is more tune into the now, which I always thought this podcast was doing. And I think it does while I'm doing it, like right now. I'm here. I'm now. This is it. The sun still feels good. So I guess that's the summary. The whole purpose of this whole discussion was me trying to get to the point of how can I get myself in a better space, in the months and, dare I say, years to come. Scarborough Dude, thank you for your patience. If you hung in for all of that, and I know most of you will do double speed, or some of you anyway. Wow. Bless you. Signing out.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are ready to die. We've lost most all of our happy people, and I'm wondering why. Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. We lost old Marty Robbins down in El Paso a little while back, and now Miss Patty Page, or one of them, is wearing black. And Kathy's clown has Don and Phil where they feel like if they could die,
If we keep on losing our singers like that, I'll be the only one you can buy. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the lovey-lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the lovey-lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.